Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and we hope you had a good weekend because it wasn't exactly that in Quebec.
The United States has been taken advantage of for decades and decades, and we can't do that anymore. We had extremely productive discussions on the need to have fair and reciprocal, meaning the same. People can't charge us 270%, and we charge them nothing. That doesn't work anymore.
It was a contentious 2 days at the G7 summit in Canada, where President Trump derided our allies for what he calls unfair trade policies. And he blamed the failure of these deals on past American presidents.
The United States leaders of the past didn't do a good job on trade. And again, I'm not blaming countries. I'm blaming our people that represented our past. It's going to change. It's going to change. I mean, it's not a question of I hope it changes. It's going to change 100%. And tariffs are going to come way down because people cannot continue to do that. We're like the piggy bank that everybody's robbing, and that ends.
In response, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said his country would impose retaliatory tariffs.
Applying equivalent tariffs to the ones that the Americans have unjustly applied to us. I have made it very clear to the president that it is not something we relish doing, but it is something that we absolutely will do because Canadians, we're polite, we're reasonable, but we also will not be pushed around.
And then it got ugly. From Air Force One, President Trump called Justin Trudeau, quote, very dishonest and weak, and said he would not honor a joint statement agreed upon by all parties. The president's top advisors used even stronger language. Here's Peter Navarro, the White House trade advisor, speaking on Fox News Sunday.
There's a special place in hell for any foreign leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump and then tries to stab him in the back on the way out the door. And that's what bad faith Justin Trudeau did with that stunt press conference.
Now Trump is in Singapore with another shot at diplomacy, this time with North Korea. But before the talks get underway, there's a mountain of work to be done to prepare for a meeting of this magnitude with two mercurial world leaders. For his part, President Trump says he's ready. And he was asked how long it would take to figure out Kim Jong-un.
I think within the first minute, I'll know.
How?
Just my touch, my feel. That's what I do. How long will it take to figure out whether or not they're serious? I said maybe in the first minute. You know, the way they say that you know if you're going to like somebody in the first 5 seconds. You ever hear that one?
David Scheer is the former U.S. ambassador to Vietnam and assistant secretary of defense. He was the deputy director of the Korea desk during Madeleine Albright's 2000 visit to Pyongyang, and he's currently senior advisor to McLarty Associates. He says the president's remarks underplay the amount of work that goes into pulling off a summit of this magnitude.
Certainly, this goes against decades of practice with our allies. And he's going to a meeting with Kim Jong-un at which he'll need leverage provided by our allies. And he gave up a chance for our allies to express support for our positions on North Korea by not signing the G7 declaration.
And let's talk a little bit about the consequences. You know, I often say rhetoric has consequences here, but we're seeing real change happening in terms of policy, and now added on to that in terms of the rhetoric that we saw over the weekend. What are the consequences of this stance that the president is taking on trade, specifically with the EU and with Mexico and with Canada?
Well, again, the United States needs the diplomatic leverage that our allies can provide. And it's not just the EU, Canada, and Mexico, but it's Japan and South Korea as well, because the actions the president has taken on trade affect our Northeast Asian allies just as negatively as they affect our other allies. And this may well have an effect both on the North Koreans and on the Chinese.
David, I'm curious, you know, just a couple of months ago, the president and North Korea were essentially at odds and threatening, you know, what some said could have been a nuclear war. Now we're at this stage of the summit. Is this a stunt? Is it a political stunt? And if so, who has what to gain? What does North Korea have to gain out of this?
Well, it's anything but a political stunt in real terms. The peace and security of Northeast Asia depend in part on the outcome of this summit. So it's no surprise that all the world is watching how President Trump and President Kim do in this summit.
And it's also been widely circulated this weekend after the president's remarks about how he wasn't going to need that much preparation for the summit and that he would know, I think he said, within the first minute with his feel and his touch whether or not things were going to go the way he would hope they would go. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't doubt that the president has a lot of experience in negotiating, but negotiating real estate deals is somewhat different than negotiating the denuclearization of North Korea. So we'll see how well the president does in this first face-to-face session. That he doesn't need preparation, I'm sure, was news to the White House staff. They've already been in Singapore for several weeks working on logistics, protocol, and public affairs, while our lead negotiator, Sung Kim, has been negotiating with the North Koreans in Panmunjom on the Korean Peninsula.
And let's talk a little bit about, in your experience, what it takes for past presidents to prepare for meetings like this.
It takes a great deal of preparation, not only by the staff, but by the principal, him or herself. Certainly, Secretary of State Albright did her homework before going to Pyongyang in the year 2000. You've got to be very careful, in particular, with the North Koreans, who are always interested in upstaging you and ensuring that their legitimacy is ensured by their encounter with the senior American official. And that's one thing that one concession that the president has made right up front by treating President Kim Jong-un as an equal. Another concession he's made, apparently, is to take a step-by-step approach to North Korean denuclearization. So the Americans come into this summit having made two big concessions. Now it's time for the North Koreans to deliver something.
And how realistic, quite frankly, is it that the North Koreans will deliver something, whether that's in the form of denuclearization? And if so, how far is it expected to be?
Well, the North Koreans have already shut down their test site, but it's not clear that that test site was of any further use after the large hydrogen bomb explosion of last year. So the North Koreans, I think, will be ready to make some concessions, but the question is, when and how will they be willing, and by how much will they be willing to denuclearize? And that's going to be only be known down the road.
Sunday for on ABC this week, the Republican Senator Lindsey Graham seemed to suggest that if this fails, if the diplomatic efforts fail, that he would call for military action. I want to play a clip from you to get your reaction to that.
Here's what I would say to my Democratic colleagues. I appreciate you telling the president what a good deal would look like, but the country needs you to back the president up to get that deal. So here's the question for my Democratic colleagues. If diplomacy fails, will you support my efforts to authorize use of military force as a last resort to convince North Korea and China things are going to be different this time?
Your reaction.
Well, I think it's interesting that the senator has proposed that the Senate approve the use of force on the Korean Peninsula, and I think that's probably a good idea. If the summit does fail, certainly we'll be on a very negative track that could include military action, I'm sure. And the president's not going to take that off the table in future rounds.
I'm speaking with former ambassador and assistant defense secretary David Scheer about the upcoming summit with North Korea. David, I'm curious about, we talked a little bit about the preparation that the president is or is not choosing to undergo for the summit. But what about the broader logistics of organizing a summit like this? Could you remind us of the circumstances under Madeleine Albright's 2000 visit to Pyongyang?
Well, negotiating the substance of the outcome of the summit is only part of the effort here. It takes a huge logistical effort that includes working out the protocol details, which with North Korea will be particularly sensitive, working out the logistics, which means the security and the things like motorcade staging. And the president arrived in Singapore last night with over 30 cars in his motorcade. So synchronizing the movements of two motorcades, the president's and President Kim Jong-un's, is going to be very interesting and complicated. The other concern, of course, is security, and the Secret Service chooses venues for both the president's stay and his meetings with security very high in mind. And so it's the Capella Resort, where the meetings will be held, will be very tightly secured.
And you mentioned the Capella Hotel. That's on an island called Sentosa Island. Why that particular location?
It's a very picturesque part of Singapore. The Capella Resort is on, I believe, over 120 acres. So it's a large area that can be easily secured. And I'm sure it's very motorcade friendly as well.
Other than the, I mean, obviously this isn't a small thing, denuclearization, but I'm just curious about what else are the president's political goals with this summit?
Well, I'm sure the president wants to demonstrate to the world that he's the great man who could unravel this knot that so many of his predecessors have failed to unravel. He's also looking to, I suspect, looking to readjust our alliance relationship with the ROK over the course of these negotiations. The North Koreans are going to want concessions on the extent to which we exercise militarily with the ROK, as well as the extent of our military presence there. So how the president manages these issues will reflect on not only the denuclearization issue, but the future reunification of the Korean Peninsula and the international order in Northeast Asia.
We did have news that two administration officials told NBC News that the United States decided not to bring up human rights at the summit. Your reaction to that?
I think human rights should be a fundamental part of our negotiating position with the North Koreans. North Korea is a human rights disaster, and it needs to be raised at the highest levels. How the president raises and in what context during the meeting should be up to him, of course. But we can't let the North Koreans forget that this is a fundamentally important issue for the United States.
And obviously, we have to talk about what success looks like here. What is success for the North Koreans? What would success look like for the Americans, for the United States?
Well, the president going in has described this meeting as a getting to know you session. And I think that's a good approach that sets expectations at a realistic level. I think success for this meeting would be a good statement of principles in a joint declaration that both sides agree to. And I think they should establish a framework within which we can negotiate denuclearization down the road.
David Scheer is a former U.S. ambassador to Vietnam and assistant secretary of defense. He was the deputy director of the Korea desk during Madeleine Albright's 2000 visit to Pyongyang, and he's currently senior advisor to McLarty Associates. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tanzina.